next matter is Scott versus Kahn. Dominic?
May it please the court, I'm Dave Domina. I'm here on behalf of the personal representative of the estate of Brandy Block because the trial court committed error when it granted summary judgment and dismissed two distinct claims, one for conscious pain and suffering and one for wrongful death. This is an action for psychiatric malpractice. The decedent was a long-term sufferer from two mental illnesses. She functioned well as long as she got appropriate medical care. In fact, she earned a college degree. She had 5 years of continuous employment. She was a volunteer in a school, and she was living a high-quality life. She became the defendant's patient on February 20th, 4 months and 4 days before her death. During those 4 months, she had face-to-face contact with the defendant four times. As a result of those four visits, he changed her medications 22 times. One of those changes was intended to substitute the drug Effexor for the drug Zoloft. Both of those medications contain a chemical called venloxifene. Venloxifene happens to be what was found in toxicology tests in this patient's body at dosage levels of 5 to 15 times normal levels, depending on how you deal with the top and the bottom end of the normal scale at the time of her death. The doctor did not intend to compound. He intended to substitute those drugs, and he didn't do it. The first error the trial court made was that it failed to recognize, really failed to grasp the conscious pain and suffering claim. This patient went from functioning and being effective to living this kind of a life during the final 4 months that she existed. She had hallucinations. She had fears. She couldn't sleep. She was anxious. She was depressed. She lost her job. She caused people around her to call the doctor's office and report that she was ill spontaneously to try to help her. Between the 8th day and the 25th day of July, the last 17 days of her life, she went to the doctor's office herself 6 times, saw him twice. Her mother called twice more as she was crashing downward, and the doctor reports that he didn't see any change in her symptoms and conditions. The people around her did. They documented the hallucination. Her psychologist referred her over to the psychiatrist for more care. He thought the medications were wrong. She had conscious pain and suffering because she was absolutely out of control on her regimen of psychotropic drugs. Dr. Carl Greiner is the expert witness for the plaintiff. He unequivocally testified that she went downward and became sicker and sicker and sicker because of the way the defendant cared for her. The defendant adduced no evidence to the contrary except his assertion that he couldn't see any change in her condition. That's the conscious pain and suffering claim. The trial court essentially didn't deal with it. In the appellee's brief here, the appellee says, well, how can there be a conscious pain and suffering claim when the injury is death? Both the doctor and the trial court failed to grasp the fact that we contend and we've established issues of fact about the fact that this patient went downhill, became sicker, and was living in torment because of psychiatric malpractice. We're entitled to try that conscious pain and suffering claim. Now I want to talk with you about the death claim. The trial court focused on the wrongful death issue. The trial court held that we did not adduce evidence of the proximate cause of death. Dr. Greiner testified in his deposition on pages 119 and 120 that the proximate cause of death was medical malpractice. He testified earlier in the same deposition when asked by defense counsel, he said he wasn't going to give an opinion on the proximate cause of death to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty. But a careful examination of that deposition makes it clear that what Dr. Greiner meant the first time he was asked was that he couldn't say precisely what the mechanism of death was. He could not say for sure that it was a seizure that caused the heart to seize up, it was a seizure that caused the nervous system to close down, it was some other mechanism of death. But what he could say was that the death was the proximate result of psychiatric malpractice whether it occurred because of a seizure affecting the heart, a seizure affecting the nervous system, or some other way. There was simply no other explanation for this patient's death. Dr. Kahn, the defendant, at one point in his testimony says, well, I think she died of a seizure. I think it was induced by anaphylactic shock to some unknown substance. That's his theory of death. There is no contrary evidence. The trial court appears to have focused on the questions of the defense lawyer the first time through in the deposition and ignored the rest, and appears to have failed to examine Dr. Greiner's report, which is the second exhibit to his deposition, in which Dr. Greiner also is specific about the fact that the care the psychiatrist rendered here failed to recognize that this patient was at risk, not only to herself, but to her medications and her surroundings, and needed to be in the hospital. The acts of malpractice here involve mismanagement of the drugs, failure to recognize the symptoms, failure to consider and evaluate for hospitalization, and failure to hospitalize this patient. This defendant physician saw this young lady within a few hours before her death. On June 25, she was at his office at 5:30 in the afternoon. He wrote an order that said, take the Zoloft off effective tomorrow, recognizing his mistake. She walked home, reported to have walked with a jagged walk, not doing well with her gait. She died lying on the floor in her own kitchen that night. There is no indication here of a crime scene. There's no indication of a suicide. Dr. Greiner says even if there was a suicide, that was the proximate result of psychiatric mismanagement. There is no indication of any other reason for death, but when she undergoes her autopsy and her blood serums and blood tissues are tested, lo and behold, we find that the bemloxifene level in her body is 5 to 15 times normal, a level that the toxicologist says could have caused death originally or initially. The coroner, the pathologist, says the likely cause was the chemical regimen and the bemloxifene levels. Later, after the defense lawyers talked to him, he opines, well, I can't be sure. Confusing, again, the legal cause of death with the mechanism by which death came to the patient. We're entitled to try the death case, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel?
May it please the court. Counsel. My name is Brian Welch. I'm here with Amber Bloom. We're here on behalf of Dr. Kahn. Mr. Domina spun for you is a tale that's not backed up by the evidence in this case. I want to address the wrongful death issue first. Our Supreme Court has told us in a wrongful death case, if it's medical malpractice, which is what this is, you got to prove three things. First, the appropriate standard of care. Secondly, that my client, Dr. Kahn, deviated from that standard of care. And third, that the deviation from the standard of care was a proximate cause of the damage or injury. He got number one, and he got number two. There's no question that there's a fact question as to whether my client met the standard of care. He loses on three. There is no evidence in this record that the plaintiff produced which would indicate that any deviations from the standard of care by Dr. Kahn proximately caused or proximately contributed to cause this lady's death. It's a wrongful death case. You gotta know why she died. Now, this business of, well, the mechanism of the injury. No. Read Dr. Greiner's deposition. And I quote you. It's Exhibit 17. Question. Are you going to be offering an opinion in this case as to the cause of death of Brandy Block? Answer, no, I am not. Question, well, then I'll ask you again. Do you have an opinion which you can state to a reasonable degree of medical certainty as to the cause of death of Brandy Block? Answer, not to a reasonable degree of medical certainty. They have failed in their proof. If you read the appellant's brief in this case, you, as court members, would never know that the autopsy upon which Dr. Greiner testifies about was amended. The appellant in this case never mentions it. Even in their reply brief, they never mention the fact that the physician that does the autopsy says, I cannot tell you the cause of death. It is undetermined.
Is it necessary to know the cause of death in connection with the allegation that Dr. Kahn failed to recognize that this young person was at risk and failed to hospitalize her?
Absolutely. Because if you don't know the cause of death, she could have died of natural causes totally unrelated to anything that he did. We don't know. You can't come in. How can I defend that in front of a jury? You allow the jury to speculate and say, well, we have a dead lady. If you establish that as the standard of care, then any patient who's under the care of a psychiatrist and internist, and they die, you can come in and get an expert to say, well, I think they managed their blood pressure incorrectly. Well, did they die of high blood pressure? Well, I don't know. It's undetermined. I mean, you're asking this jury to engage in rank speculation, which is what their brief does. I've been in this business a while. I cannot believe that the plaintiff in this case ignores the amended autopsy to this court. I find that terrible.
Was the amended autopsy done prior to Dr. Greiner's deposition?
No. And counsel did not have an opportunity to get an affidavit from Dr. Greiner and say, oh, I've never seen this amended autopsy. They didn't. The only thing we have is his deposition. That amended autopsy was well before the motion for summary judgment. Dr. Greiner makes no business, Mr. Dominus says, well, it was the mechanism of death. This is what he says. Says he doesn't know. Mr. Dominus just stood up here and told you that this is not a suicide case. That's one thing we agree on. He says it in his brief. It's not a suicide case. Okay? If it's not a suicide case, then why do they spend countless pages? And in the Bill of Exceptions in this case, you have numerous things on the drug effexor. The drug effexor does have a black box warning by the FDA. And it says that if it's given, it increases suicidality, thoughts of suicide. Well, if it's not a suicide case, then what does the effexor have to do with this? Now, Mr. Domina has fashioned an argument out of whole cloth that because there was an elevated level, and by the way, there is no scientific maximum on venlafaxine, which is effexor. He says it's 5 to 15 times. I think he's wrong on the amount. He says, well, we've got an increase there, so I'm going to say that that caused a seizure, which then is the responsibility of Dr. Kahn. Well, okay, if that's your theory, then get your expert to say it. His expert doesn't say it. It's just argument to this court to try to connect the dots. It's throw it up on the wall and see if we can get something to stick. That's not what the law requires. We cited in our brief numerous cases from the Nebraska Supreme Court, one case involving a pathologist who speculated as to the cause of death, and the Supreme Court said, no, you cannot allow speculation. It's got to be to a reasonable degree of certainty, otherwise that's what the jury's going to do. The last thing I want to address is the conscious pain and suffering, which counsel argues that it's a separate cause of action. So we got the wrongful death. I honestly do not believe there's any way this court could send this back for a trial on wrongful death. Can't. They did not meet the criteria. But let's talk about the conscious pain and suffering. The same standard applies. You got to go through it. What is the appropriate standard of care? Was the appropriate standard of care breached? And is that breach a proximate cause? There is no testimony in this case from Dr. Greiner as to this issue of conscious pain and suffering. He says, well, yeah, I would have put the patient on Geodon. I would have put the patient on this drug, or I would have adjusted it this way. I would have adjusted it that way. There is no testimony in this record from Dr. Greiner to say that any failure of Dr. Kahn caused or proximately caused this conscious pain and suffering. It's not there. And that requires expert testimony. Whether you say it's a separate cause of action, fine. It's a separate cause of action. It is still subject to the same requirement that the Supreme Court has laid down in a medical malpractice case. And we cite the numerous cases to the court. Do you have any questions?
Did the district court address this issue?
What the district court said is that the conscious pain and suffering is hooked to the wrongful death, and so therefore it fits. And if this court says no, if you say no, Judge End was wrong, I think you can say he was right, but for the wrong reason. And that very well may be the situation that we've got here. He was right, but for the wrong reason. The right reason may very well be that in the analysis, it's the same analysis of the wrongful death, that the plaintiff proof fails. Any other questions?
No questions. Thank you very much. How much time does the appellant have left?
2 minutes.
Counsel?
May it please the court. First of all, pathologists performing autopsies do not decide proximate cause questions. Either courts or juries decide proximate cause questions. The fact that the autopsy report was amended is not dispositive of the question of proximate cause. And it's not effective on the question of our expert witness's opinion. Our expert witness reached his opinion without relying on the autopsy report because it was focused on the mechanism of death. The mechanism of death can be important. It's urged here today that it's absolutely essential to know what the mechanism of death is. The words were, you must know why someone died to be able to prove a case for wrongful death. Well, let me tell you why I think that's not correct. In a head-on collision case in which there is a massive chest injury to one driver who is killed, it might be very important to know the mechanism of death if the claim is that the pacemaker implanted in the chest of the decedent failed at about the time of the collision. But if there is no pacemaker, there is no cardiac history, there are no issues of any kind about any medical condition that might be an alternate cause of death to that driver decedent, the blunt force trauma is sufficient and we need not investigate further. This is a psychiatric blunt force trauma case in which this defendant booted the care of this patient on multiple levels, left her out of the hospital, which obviously had nothing to do with the autopsy report. The autopsy report is extraneous to hospitalization. Caused her to suffer a dramatic injury in her life, an injury that seems to be dismissed by the defense, which would focus instead on physical injuries, suggesting they're the only kind to be redressed in our courts. This is a person who fought her illness and functioned with it successfully, made the most of her life, did well with good care, deserves our respect for that, and inspires me to wonder, when I don't use my talents to the maximum, what's wrong with me? Her case should be tried.
Thank you very much. Counsel are excused. Case is submitted. That completes this session of the Court of Appeals. We'll be in recess till tomorrow.